The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
Now, as the count continues in the UK, local elections and results continue to pour in, it does appear that reform is being embraced throughout Great Britain, while Labour looks like it's being left out in the cold. And here to discuss this and more is Lucy Fisher, Whitehall editor with the Financial Times and host of the Political Fix podcast. Good evening to you, Lucy. Not a great day for Keir Starmer and Labour.
Well, that's right. Dismal results for the Labour Party today, losing heavily to reform in the north and indeed losing to other parties across the board in clear. Where is now a safe seat for Labour altogether going forward?
Currently, it looks like Reform is on 27% of the vote, Conservatives on 20, Labour on 16, Lib Dems on 14 and the Greens on 13. This is a new dawn for the UK in general, isn't it? What has been for such a long time a two-party system is now blown wide open.
I think that's absolutely right. This is the death knell for the two-party system in England, bringing it into line with the rest of the UK, where that has been the case for some time, that we've seen a more fragmented multi-party system. And it means that, you know, there is a lot up for grabs and a lot that's unpredictable in the general election, where many seats might be won or lost on small margins. Makes it more difficult for pollsters to predict what's going on the ground with so many moving parts, and of course presents, you know, real pressure on the UK as a first past the post political system, which can lead to sort of quite unusual outcomes in a multi-party system.
Sure, because we were looking at the last general election earlier on here. 34% of the vote went to Labour. Labour with a massive majority, a massive mandate in Parliament that didn't reflect that vote, not truly. So will there now have to be conversations about changing the system in the wake of this new, I suppose, seven-party system really within the UK?
Well, let's see. One might think that for Nigel Farage, it's very helpful for him to cement Reform's reputation as the preeminent party of the British right in this set of elections, far out eclipsing the Conservatives, who really face, quite existential questions now. And you can see that, you know, Farage heading into the next set of elections locally next year, and indeed the general election, is likely to make the argument that, you know, he is the only right-wing candidate who can end up in Downing Street. Reform's the only party that can enter and lead a government, and therefore a vote for, mm-hmm. for the Conservatives is splitting that vote on the right and giving, you know, progressive, more liberal parties a chance to sort of either retain or come into power. So it's an argument that, you know, Farage has argued against in the past, but it may now suit him to cleave to that narrative.
Mm-hmm. Reform currently on 874 seats in the local elections, more than Conservative and Labour put together still. It's inarguable that if this was a general election, Nigel Farage would be Prime Minister.
Well, look, I think it's wrong to take local elections as an indication for a general election. And indeed, past local rounds have not proven reliable litmus tests of what will happen at a Westminster election. So I don't want to extrapolate too much from it. And of course, turnout tends to be far lower too. But what is clear is that there is a huge amount of appetite for reform in this country. And, you know, they are on the march, as are the Greens, to a slightly less extent, but and they haven't quite so far lived up to some of the bolder expectations for them. But clearly, populists on the left and the right in the UK are gathering steam as people reject the status quo parties.
It does look like a more polarized landscape, never mind, I suppose, a more diverse landscape because there's more parties. But with Reform and the Greens, the hard left and the hard right on the march, that's a very polarized parliament.
Well, of course, these aren't the.
I suppose, speculatively, I suppose, is what I'm aware that these are not the parliamentary elections.
Yes, well, quite. It's a more polarised political landscape in the UK. And in part, I think that is because, we've had stagnant living standards in this country since the financial crash of, 2008-09. The country has had sluggish growth. The macroeconomic picture has meant, things have been tough for many households. And I think the cost of living pressures have left a lot of people, wanting to roll the dice and try something new. They had 14 years of Tory-led administration that ended in, failure under Rishi Sunak. Keir Starmer promised change, but I think for many voters, they've been left disappointed by what he's managed to achieve in 2 years with a vast majority in Parliament. And that's why the populist solutions on the left and the right and the promises of a much much better Britain that are and some of the policies that are contested whether they would actually work are nonetheless of interest to voters who seem to be fed up with Labour and the Conservatives right now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Keir Starmer. His future is that increasingly uncertain now in the wake of these results.
Well, look, I think it is. We haven't seen, any massively prominent figures go over the parapet today to, call for his resignation. We've heard some critics who had already voiced despair at the direction of the party and the government under him reiterate their position. That's people like the Hartlepool Labour MP, Jonathan Brash. Labour lost control of Hartlepool Council this week. People like the TSSA Transport Union General Secretary, who has also been critical of Starmer before, and then a handful of other sort of malcontent MPs and sort of figures, the peer Lord David Watts, who is a former chair of the Parliamentary Labour Party. But we haven't had a cabinet big beast or Andy Burnham, the Manchester mayor, who's also regarded as a king across the water, mm-hmm. Deciding to make a public call. So for the moment, I think Downing Street is likely still bracing for any such move.
I'm sure. But also, there isn't, like you mentioned, Andy Burnham, that there isn't anybody really obvious. He doesn't even hold a seat in Westminster. And in addition to that, Labour is a much weakened party after all of this. You would imagine that perhaps rocking the boat right now may not be in its best interests either.
I think that is certainly part of the consideration and of many MPs I speak to who aren't convinced, who are, concerned that the party's not doing well under Starmer, but aren't convinced that plunging it into turmoil by defenestrating him and going through a sort of agonising leadership contest would necessarily help. Look, we do know that Angela Rayner has a level of support from the soft left. Wes Streeting has a mm-hmm. level of support from the Blairite contingent of Labour. But nobody sort of wanting to be the first mover. And in Westminster, the creaking cliche that harks back to Michael Heseltine, he who wields the dagger never wears the crown, is ringing throughout the corridors here. Nobody wants their horse in the race to be the one who makes the first move. They want their sort of preferred candidate to remain a clean skin and not be sort of tainted by being seen to be involved in felling Starmer. So it remains to be seen whether there might be some kind of stalking horse or outrider who makes a move against him. But even if he gets through today, the danger is by no means over. It's going to be a difficult weekend, a difficult week next week. He's got the King's Speech coming up. We know that Number 10 is scrambling to sort of get a policy blitz off the ground to try and reset his administration. But, at a time of fiscal constraints, there's not a lot of money to go around on eye-catching new policies. It's not easy to see what levers he can really pull.
Some people on this side of the water would look over and say that one of the reasons that Britain's economic woes continue is the post-Brexit fallout, and that there's a certain irony in the success of reform in light of that. What, if anything, are people in the UK saying about that?
Well, the polling done in the UK suggests that sentiment has moved you know, quite considerably in sort of favour of closer EU relations since the Brexit referendum, which is, of course, 10 years ago this summer. And we know that closer relations with the EU is one of the levers that, that Starmer is planning to pull as part of this post-election reset. However, so far, all the mood music from Downing Street has been that while he will signal he wants closer relations with the EU, he's made clear his willingness to dynamically align with EU rules in order to sort of boost access to certain markets and to pay into EU budgets in order to achieve that. His red lines from the general election manifesto remain in place. No return to the single market, no return to a customs union with the EU, and certainly no return to free movement. And of course, we know within those parameters, there's only very little wiggle room that Brussels will be willing to sort of allow him to maneuver in. So it doesn't feel like it's going to be the big reset that it's being talked up to be if those red lines remain in place.
Maybe lastly, Lucy, the nationalism in Scotland and in Wales that we're witnessing, what do you think the impact of that is going to be?
Well, let's see. I think striking to my mind that Plaid Cymru in Wales has not put an independence referendum on its first term agenda. You know, it hasn't been the preeminent issue on which the Nationalist Party has campaigned. That has stuck to the more mainstream areas of cost of living pressures, health, migration and so forth. And when it comes to Scotland, again, you know, John Swinney has talked up independence, but even some, you know, supporters of the SNP say they, I think, more want to see the SNP in power to sort of gain leverage over Westminster rather than sort of pursue separatism at this juncture in time. So how real the phenomenon is, I'm not sure, but there's certainly going to be a lot more debate and talk about it in the public discourse.
Yeah, and currently Scotland, the only place where no reform candidate has achieved a seat as yet. Look, thank you very much for joining us, Lucy. That is Lucy Fisher there, Whitehall editor with the Financial Times and host of the Political Fixed podcast.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. This is News Talk.